Hello, hello, hello. I'm your Ina Garten, hostess with the mostest, Michael Munoz. And welcome to In Yo Mouth!
In Yo Mouth.
I'm the queen of food who's always in the mood.
To lick it right, lick it good, show you how to
hug. Oh, God, that's good.
I want to know what you eat from the streets to the sheets.
So open wide, honey.
I'm coming.
In Yo Mouth.
I got the goosebumps.
Hey there and welcome back, folks. Once again, I'm your hostess with the mostest, Munoz. And I mean, we are just flying through this year. My birthday month is over. Yes, we can stop talking about it. But you know what we're celebrating this month? I know, as if y'all aren't just sick of me celebrating things on this podcast. But this month marks 3 years of me being in y'all's mouths. Can you believe it? February 8th is the 3-year marker from when I released the first teaser. I really can't believe it that this has been weekly for 3 years. But I am so grateful and honored to all of you out there who listen, who send me all sorts of love from across the world. It is really, really greatly appreciative. I am appreciative of the love you show me, is what I meant to say. And exciting things coming, new logo, more merch, because why not? For those of you out there buying the merch, thank you so much. It's just an exciting year, and I am blessed to be here. And I am just going to cut to the chase, because today's guest, I have actually been trying to get on this podcast for 3 years. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming the one, the only, Jake Cohen himself. Hi, Jake.
Hi. Persistence is key. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes. Well, you know what? That's the motto I use in my love life, too.
Everything. I mean, there is nothing in this world. You want something, you just keep...
Yes.
I'm a serial nagger, so I know exactly.
I mean, but would you believe that I found an email that I sent to you in 2018? After
this is, I mean, just drag me, please, and do it. I'm terrible.
No,
with everything, but yes. No. It's incredible. I remember the day we met. Funny enough, it was at a Jewish event. It was at a hotel
event that shall not be named.
I don't even remember the name of the hotel.
That's
all
great.
I know is,
yeah,
it was like a screening of this documentary, and had something to do, I think, with Israel. All I know is a bunch of Mike Solomonov and Lior from La Boite were there, and it was in partnership with Bread's Bakery, who invited me, and we met.
Yes.
And
yes,
and I remember.
It just so happened. It was so weird because I feel like I conjured you, because I had just, that's back when I used to have a podcast co-host, and the podcast was very, very extremely different than what it is today. And I had just found you and posted a Man Crush Monday, and then not 2 days later, you like showed up in front of me, and I was like, this can't be real. And then I sent you an email, and lo and behold, you know what? Right time, right place, because you're here now, and I couldn't be more grateful to have you here. So thank you.
My pleasure. Super excited to chat.
Yeah, so for those of you out there, In Yo Mouth listeners, that may not know who Jake Cohen is, and I'm sure y'all know by now, Jake Cohen is a self-described nice Jewish boy who loves food. He studied at the Culinary Institute of America and went on to spend time working the line at New York City institutions, Danielle and ABC Kitchen. I loved ABC Kitchen. He eventually transitioned out of restaurants and into food media, first at Savour Magazine, where he was a recipe tester, and then started writing and contributing to dozens of incredible food publications, including serving as food editor of TastingTable.com, as well as food critic for Time Out New York. Yes, let me just pick up those names that I just dropped, people. Lately, he spends his days at as the editorial and test kitchen director of the Feed, and his nights are spent working on his first cookbook, Jew-ish, which is to be published by HMH Spring this year.
And I need to update my bio. I don't work at Feed anymore. I'm just so terrible with everything. It's so... No. That's fine. I'm literally... It's so funny because I literally just took that off of my LinkedIn last night. I just am so bad with my life and organizing it and everything. Like you said, like I'm a one man band and I'm just a mess. And I think it's part of the shit. It's part of the brand and I lean into it.
Yeah. And I mean, pandemic times, if you can't be a mess, are we even living in a pandemic? That's it.
Exactly.
But before we get anywhere, I need to start this pod the way we always start this pod. In the grand tradition of In Your Mouth, Jake, I would love to wish you happy National Carrot Cake Day.
I do love carrot cake.
I love a carrot cake.
It's there are a few things. I do not like nuts in my carrot cake.
I was just about to say that. No nuts. You're no nuts?
No nuts.
I need all the nuts.
No nuts, no raisins. Like, I get it. There's a time and a place for, like, to me, that's like... Then we're getting into like morning glory muffin territory with like the coconut and the nuts and the raisins. And I'm into that. It's great. Just for a cake, I want a cake with a lot of carrot. And that's it.
Oh, okay. I'm the exact opposite. Call me insatiable even. Give me the nuts and the golden raisins and maybe a splash of rum. You know?
Ooh. As long as there's tons of cream cheese frosting, I am good.
We can agree. We can agree on that. Do you have a carrot cake recipe on your site?
Because my site like doesn't. My site is like a business card. I need to start. That'll be a project for once the book comes out. Then I'll do that. Right now, all my recipes I started doing is just having them live on my Instagram.
Yeah.
So I actually do have a really good carrot cake recipe in my reels. But the thing about that is it's easy for people to just see it and make it. It's hard because then you have to like scroll through if you want to find it. But to me, I think it's like it's worth the work. So just
Good luck. Do it. Listen, besides having a beautiful face, Jake Cohen also has a beautiful, you know, curated Instagram of all the beautiful foods. Just while you're listening, In Your Mouth listeners, or mouthfuls, as I've been calling them lately, Jake. Because who doesn't enjoy a mouthful? Here we go. Just go to his Instagram at Jake Cohen. Take a look at the beautiful face and the beautiful food. While maybe, you know what? Find the carrot cake recipe while you listen. You know, it's active listening is what I like to call it.
People have gone really wild for the carrot cake. I have a devout cult of people who make my carrot cake recipe because it is very, very good.
Is it like your Grossi Pelosi vodka sauce? Do you know Dan Pelosi?
No, my... Of course.
Yeah,
of
right. Course. Who doesn't?
I mean, love yes. Grossi. Grossi's an icon.
Yep.
But so like Dan's known for that vodka sauce. Which I mean, you're from New York?
Yep, born and raised, baby.
So it's like we have the things that we say, like, my husband always makes fun of me because they're like certain words that I just can't. I just feel my mouth just can't physically make those sounds.
Yeah.
And anything with the aus is like a perfect example. I was just filming, I was in studio last week filming a bunch of food videos and I had to keep saying pause. And it just, the more I said it, I feel like the stronger the accent got and just there was no looking back. So like sauce with a W is really sauce with a W. The version of that would probably be... I feel like I have things, which I never like to be... I get bored of something. When I become known for something too much, I just move on.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a few years ago, it was like I was doing like these pasta twirls that everyone loved. And then I was...
I remember that. You lived for a pasta twirl moment. Like, you were having all the twirls.
People were like... Some people call it like my butthole pasta because it was like very like meticulously swirled pasta. And then I got bored of that. So I moved on. And then it was avocado roses or just like pretty avocado toast, which I still will do. It's like, to me, it's like my...
More anus. You're like the Georgia O'Keeffe of food.
100%. 100%. And then it was like with that, I mean, to me, that was always like my bridesmaid's moment. You remember that scene where like Kristen Wiig like makes that gorgeous cupcake all alone in her kitchen and then just takes a bite out of it. And to me, like that was... that's the equivalent for that to me, where it's like, I'm in my kitchen, I make this like gorgeous avocado toast, and then she's like, all right, just shove it in my mouth. And that's it, moving on. So then from there, it became like, I would say right now, the big things are my challah. That.
Love your challah.
Tadig, the crispy Persian rice I make for my husband.
Always,
and
delicious.
And smashed potatoes. I just love smashed potatoes.
Yeah, I mean, the internet grasps on to odd things, don't you think?
It's always carbs. It's something, it's some kind of comfort food, some kind of starch, or something visually appealing. It's you never know what it is, but as soon as it starts to take off, you just like see it and hold on to it.
Yeah, so let's just start at the very beginning. And I know y'all out there were waiting for, like, this day in gay history. But believe it or not, the more I searched, the less I found for February 3rd. So, you know, like, we're just celebrating National Carrot Cake Day, and we'll just pick up the history next week. You know, history needed a break this week, I guess, Jake. I don't know. But let's start at the very beginning. And, you know, talk to me about this love of food and where it began.
I mean, it's a love of eating. I think that's really where it always begins. From there, I would say it really started in high school. I was not very popular. I was a heavy kid, and I didn't have a lot of friends. And I started making friends through, like, hosting these dinner parties. And it became this really just, like, positive reinforcement of extending hospitality, cooking for others, and in return, finding friendships growing and confidence growing and all of these things all around the concept of food. And
wait a minute. You were throwing dinner parties in high school for
your
friends?
Okay, this wasn't like, I wasn't like cooking like fancy shit. Like this was very, I was very basic. Very, it was very like beginning in the kitchen. But again, high school is for most kids know either nothing or they really just like cook garbage. And
I'm picturing you with a, with your massive cast iron skillet with your butter bath and your steaks and you're like, you know, your mom and dad like plating like, you know, sauces on the
from the bath. Yeah. You're just coming and just like swiping it onto the floor. This is garbage.
This is garbage.
It was very much like printouts of Ina Garten recipes or Giada things. I mean, I had like. These two Ina recipes and this one Giada had this like chocolate honey ganache tart that I always would make and everyone loved it. And I always, it's like looking back, all of these things I made were like just so basic. And it's just so funny how Food Network was able to just grasp the zeitgeist around food for so long. Just kind of.
It was. Funny enough, The rise of like Giada and Ina was a rise of like, and I talk about it a lot on this podcast, where the food media, that kind of food show, was very quiet and very beautiful and beautifully shot, and it was these stunning things. And I remember sitting on my mother's couch watching these things and just longing for the days of yore, you know, Graham Kerr, the Julia Child, even the Emeril, like, because there was more of a show to it. It was a lot more fun. And then not seeing a face like mine, right? Not only a Latino face, but yet a queer face, like an LGBTQ. And that's kind of where my food journey started.
There still isn't. There still isn't a queer face,
you know?
which to me is one of the big issues in terms of why that those kinds of platforms are really in the past. And I think there's nothing but like hope for continual growth. But at the end of the day, it's like, I want to be getting my content now from not just one place, but a whole array of voices and platforms that are going to represent the world around us. And to me, one of the main issues that we find, and again, this is in food media as a whole, anywhere where there's like money behind it and it's not someone in their home kitchen, there becomes this like translation of whitewashing or just making it approachable for the idea of who the audience is versus like telling stories and having it be truly, truly, truly authentic, not to like a cuisine, because I also think that that's a very harmful thing in this world of assuming that one person can represent an entire culture, when so many of these dishes, especially ones that come from like diaspora cultures like my own, it's so specific to family. So the way that your mother makes something, a specific dish, can be completely different than someone else's mother. And it's both beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard.
Yeah, you make...
It's hard when someone's like, this is... Like, this is the recipe for blank. No, this is my family's recipe for blank. I hope you like it. If your family makes it different, that's also beautiful.
No, that's why it brings me so much joy. And I love that you just dropped that, like, wealth of knowledge about diaspora families. And it brings me so much joy every Christmas to give every last Puerto Rican person I know, or everybody who, like, makes coquito. Have you ever had coquito growing up in New York?
I mean.
Yeah.
And there's a recipe that's going around. Everyone's making this one recipe right now. The name escapes me of who's the author who developed it, but everyone's making it, and it's just been like, it's been way too long.
Yeah, but I love to just like give people a ton of shit about it, because it's like, my mother's way is the right way. You know? And it's why I'm also so grateful that this podcast In Your Mouth has turned into what it has turned into and become what it is, because it's not about me. It's a platform for people like us to not only, you know, talk about what we're doing and what we're excelling at, but share our stories in a different way through this food lens, you know? And it's been really amazing. And that's why I'm really floored that it's 3 years later. And I was like, wow, I can't believe like we're still trucking along here, you know?
But it it's a testament to perseverance in the sense of like sticking to your guns. And again, like I'm not a pioneer or anyone who's at the forefront of a lot of these conversations. I'm just someone who likes to listen and also apply it to however it affects my own life or the way I tell food stories. But the most important thing is it's no matter what, I think you can see the voices in food who are presenting something that they think the world wants versus just presenting themselves and finding their audience that naturally fits that.
Fits them, and yes. And this
always
is
always said that I'd rather have a small audience that loves me authentically than a huge audience of me putting on a show and pretending to be something I'm not.
Yeah, for sure. And this is why I was so excited to have you on the podcast and talk about like right time, right place, just because what you do is so authentically you. And, you know, more often than not, we follow these people on Instagram, TikTok, or wherever you're following, you know, these, for lack of a better term, right, influencers, you know, everyone cringes. Oh,
worst word
ever.
I hate when people call me an influencer. Oh.
But you follow these people and you think you get to know them, but then do you really know them? And this is the place where, like, and this is my favorite thing about what I do and what I'm doing, is really kind of getting deep into, like, kind of, like, the fun things about you. And what else are you doing back there? And how did this come about? And so on and so forth. You know, like, that's where the meat is. And that's what gives you this depth, you know? Right? Because the challah bread is gorgeous and I'm sure it's delicious. But, like, you know, what it'll make me want to do that more, just because maybe that challah bread comes from your grandma or something, and there's a special memory attached to it or something like that, you know? And we've heard so many amazing stories just throughout that way. And one thing that I love that you do is that you teach your man how to cook, right?
Yes. Oh my God.
How did that come about?
It was out of necessity. We were looking for things that we could do as a couple, and at the end of the day, we don't have a ton of hobbies. We don't have a ton of we eat and we work out.
So yeah, you don't have an OnlyFans, OnlyFans out there.
As you could tell, I'm not. If I was on Twitter, then that might be something that could spiral. But I'm not even on Twitter. I'm on Twitter, but I don't actually go on Twitter. But that when I'm on Twitter, it's just like, I only follow OnlyFans pages, I think.
you listen, it's all I've done during the pandemic.
Yeah. Incredible. And I've seen, okay, just a little segment, just on TikTok, I end up finding a lot of these people through TikTok. And like, I've known of Reno Gold forever, and I feel like everyone knows him because he's such a popular OnlyFans person. But he's used his platform and makes so much money, so much money. But then he'll like, don't, he like did this huge donation to Elton John's AIDS Foundation with like everything he made in December. And it's just like stuff like that where it's, I don't know. That just made me, I really loved seeing that. And it made me want, I don't subscribe to any OnlyFans people, but it made me want to subscribe to his. Anyway,
listen, I mean, why not? You're supporting small business. That's in
it.
A way,
sex work is work.
Hello. Hello, sex work is work. Like, normalize seeing your friend's buttholes.
So anyway, speaking of us, we're not going to go down that route as of right now. Yeah. In this current point of our life, but we were working out together. We started to like try to exercise together. But then the other half of that is what all right. So we would go to do a spin class together, go to Equinox for a kickboxing class together. But other than that, the next thing was like, let's get into the kitchen together. And we started this in our studio apartment. So this was a galley kitchen, about the size of my dining room table that I'm talking to you right now.
Well, I live in 120 square feet in Times Square.
No, you do not.
Yes, I do. Yeah, when we hang up, I'll give you a tour. It's a mess.
I have a friend on the Upper West Side who has the same thing. He was on Rachel Ray's show for his tiny, I think it's even, I don't remember how many square feet, but it's around the same. So we were in a 400 square foot studio, which is still tiny. But the kitchen was just absolutely minuscule. And you have to remember that, like, this is where I was producing. This is where I did the first half of like testing for my cookbook. I did it all out of this with like not even a full oven. It was one of like the 19 inch ovens. And I didn't have a dishwasher, like all of this. So we started doing.
Girl, I use a Hamilton Beach.
I feel like,
shout out to you, not a sponsor. Yeah.
But the videos, I mean, it was just really, really, really nice to find something that we can do. And he knows nothing about food. When we first started dating, he lived in this apartment in like one of those like new high rises. When we met, we actually only lived three blocks away from each other. We met on Hinge.
All right, Hinge.
It worked. But he had one of those like bachelor kitchens where it had two electric burners and a convection microwave, and that was it.
I'm feeling very attacked right now.
But it was one of those things that he never had any need. He like worked in a job in which he like had ordered in for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it was just something that allowed us to start to have fun. People loved it because the way, I think too often with food content, people are talking at you. And in what we did, it was a conversation. It was talking about the really, like, he was asking questions that beginners ask that most people in my field overlook because we just assume that everyone knows it. And to have that kind of balance was just like really great. People loved it. So we kept doing it and they're fun. And we do them time to time. Now I do them live because we just get the audience in as well. And he's great with like responding to comments and being the
make him do the work, honey. Make it. You know, it's a partnership, right? And you got to bring in those dollars. I love that. I love that. And you're married. And how does that all kind of play into? Because one of the most beautiful things that I find about you, besides the face, is the fact that you're so deeply rooted in your heritage, you know? And as we all know, you know, religion isn't like the best place or the most accepting place of people of an LGBTQ nature. And so how did that, like, you know, play in with your family and play into just your life as a whole?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because our relationship is probably the whole reason for everything. I grew up in a very secular household. I was bar mitzvahed. I went to Hebrew school as a kid. We would do the big holidays with the family, but we didn't like actively go to temple. We didn't actively like, we didn't have Shabbat growing up. We don't keep kosher, any of those things. So very much like that Seinfeld-esque picture of an Ashkenazi Jew in New York. Mm-hmm. As an adult, when we met, it became this conversation because he had no perspective of anything I grew up with. He is Iraqi Persian Jewish, so his definition of Jewish food is not the same as my definition of Jewish food. He had never had babka. The traditions, the rituals, the recipes, they're all different. At the end of the day, we're still part of the same tribe. We're still part of the same customs. We just celebrate them differently. So it became this journey of exploring, like, what did us being a young Jewish couple mean to us? And the second part of that was we wanted gay friends. We didn't have any gay friends. There are, you see all these people with their gaggles of gays that they go to the clubs with, or they go to Fire Island.
Or they get on a boat in Puerto Vallarta that sinks during a pandemic.
God bless gays over COVID. That's it. That's yep. it.
Shout out. Oh my God, it's the first gays over COVID mention on
the best, the best. The best.
The best.
And there's this incredible Twitter thread that they shared kind of explaining why it's so, like, an example of gays over COVID is so important to our community in terms of accountability, in terms of a lot of the toxicity that infiltrates the gay community. But that's a whole separate conversation. Anyway.
And a whole separate podcast.
Whole separate podcast. Yes. With us, we started, like, all right, we had a few friends that we knew. So we're like, all right, let's go to the like, where do you find gay people? I mean, gay bars. We don't drink. We're not, like, sober. We're just not, I always say, like, we're like the New York Mag article, we're Cali sober. But we're just not, that was not our thing. So if we were going to gay bars to make friends with a small group and hopefully grow it, we would just be building a community around a ritual that we don't actually enjoy of drinking, and of being in large groups, which also we don't like. So we were like, great, why don't we try synagogue? And there's this incredible queer congregation in New York, CBST. Mm-hmm. And we went, and it was wonderful. But Alex grew up even more secular than I did. He wasn't bar mitzvahed. He didn't go to Hebrew school. So he didn't have the kind of, like, just familiarity than I did. So it became a beautiful thing that we enjoyed, but just still wasn't it. And then we started hosting Shabbat, and it very much scratched that itch in the same way that hosting those dinner parties in high school did, in the sense that we were able to, like, build community, explore our food cultures. I got to, like, show him all of the dishes I grew up with. I got to learn and cook the dishes he grew up with. And at the same time, we got to have fun and have this conversation with all of these people. Some of them friends we've known forever. Some of them people I just, like, met on Instagram. A perfect example, and it's like I talk about him. I mean, he's one of my best friends. His name's Evan Ross Katz. He's a writer and has his own incredible podcast. Mm-hmm. And we followed each other on Instagram, and this was in, like, 20, I don't even remember. It was 3 years ago, I think, I hosted my first Shabbat. And I just, like, you should come over to Shabbat. And he came to the first one, and he's come to pretty much everyone ever since. And he's one of my best friends. And it was all based on that that extension of an invitation, where there was no expectation. It was just, come over, come eat food. And I feel like I have done that to so many people, and I've had people over for Shabbat that I really could have never imagined actually coming to my dinner table, because of the fact that there's just something so raw about extending hospitality and welcoming someone into your home for a meal.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And back in the day, like, when, you know, Twitter was beginning and blogs were really, like, you know, starting to pick up traction, there was a whole gay, like, they were called tweet-ups, and there was, like, a whole, like, quote-unquote, the early-on gay influencers that I was, like, part of the circle, that we would do these tweet-ups and then go to meet each other at the bars, and, you know, and I still have some friends from that, and I love that. And PS.com, I have not received a Shabbat invite, and I need one.
Yes, I mean.
Because I live for a Shabbat dinner, although I am Boricua, you know, New York Rican all through and through. I live for a Shabbat. Mm-hmm. I have been to plenty.
I love that. And that was the thing. It became this space. And while it originated as a queer Shabbat and it often was queer Shabbat, it then just became like Shabbat in the sense of there are Fridays where it's like, great, let's pick a category of people that we want to bring in. And sometimes it was like colleagues, people from the food world that I want to bring in. Sometimes it was some of my husband's colleagues, like, let's bring them and host them. And it then became this really fun game of mixing and matching people, of who's going to get along with who, how are we going to drive the conversation. We have a few close friends that are of the, I don't like to like name drop. So they're just of the affluent gay community of New York. And one of the number one things that they've done in terms of inspiring and mentoring us that we've taken from their friendship has been the way that they so carefully curate every dinner, every event, every weekend to really build that kind of community. And I think that is such an art and a skill.
Very similarly, I used to throw something called Big Gay Thanksgiving, where I would do the same thing. There would be like, you would get an invite, and there were so many seats, and there would always be one stranger to the group, like maybe somebody I had met out at a bar, or somebody I had come across and we had just met, and I'd be like, hey, do you want to come to this? And then there'd be seating, like, so that the extroverts wouldn't all sit next to each other, you know, and it would all be like carefully planned out. And then the humdinger, as I would call him, would be placed, you know, right in the middle of it all, like to get absorbed. And yeah, it was great. It became too much, and it, because everybody wanted in, that's and it was just too much to produce out of 120 square feet.
Valid.
So, I mean, I love all of this. And I think we're going to pick this up again in a minute. But I think now I really want to take you to my favorite part and the audience's favorite part of the podcast. A little something we like to call, Jake, food news update. Food news.
Ooh, honey,
you ain't ready,
girl. Spill the tea.
News update.
Budweiser, Coke, and Pepsi won't be airing Super Bowl ads this year. Look at that. Did you hear about this?
I mean, I did not, but I'm not watching the Super Bowl. I don't, the boy who isn't the weekend, like, I don't need, there's zero. After the last Super Bowl where, like, we got an actual, like, performance, I don't need the weekend. Yeah. I don't need to see the ads. I will say it's like, I don't think it is ever such a great use of money, in the sense that to spend so much on an advertisement of a sports show versus what they can be doing that in terms of putting that back into communities that spend a lot.
I mean, well, this is part of the reason at least Budweiser is backing out, right? Because these 30 second spots are an estimated 5.5 million, according to Associated Press. But Anheuser-Busch, which usually runs a Budweiser and a Bud Light ad during the Super Bowl, has backed out, and they're going to spend the money on coronavirus vaccination awareness efforts. Can you
love
read
it,
my
love it, love it.
Yeah, and so then once the bars open, they're going to send some of the money to relief in person.
I think that's the most important thing right now, because they are hit so hard. The restaurant world, especially the bar world, because you think about, like, restaurants have pivoted to takeout, but it's like bar world is about it being a social setting. The idea of people aren't doing takeout for their there's some are in terms of like cocktail programs, but they're definitely hit a lot harder.
Yeah, and so I'm here for that, but Budweiser, 100%. Put the money, give the money back to the people who are, you know, buying the product, right? Because it'll only just come back to you, right?
100%.
Right. Yes. Nothing says I love you like a bouquet of heart-shaped Tyson chicken nuggets.
I mean, I'm not gonna say anything bad about this, because like I love a good dino nugget. So what's another shape? I will say in general,
I mean,
I'm not into like, I like the, I try to not buy any of the really processed farm conventional agriculture chicken when I can. But in general, a heart-shaped nugget is not something to point your nose
at. I mean, Valentine's Day is right around the corner, Jake, and you have a husband to think about. And what better way to say I love you than some Tyson?
He would... Yeah, I hope he can't. He's not listening right now because I'm going to get them for him because he'd love it. He'll love it. He'll love it.
Well,
he'll honestly be better, well, better than any chocolates. He would love that.
Well, there's a catch though. So you'll need to enter a contest to get your hands on a bag. The brand's Chicken Nugget Bouquet Contest started February 1st and calls on Nug lovers. This is from purewow.com, to craft their best nugget bouquet and share it on social media. Just post a photo of your masterpiece on Instagram or Twitter and tag Tyson and hashtag Nugget Bouquet Contest by February 17th. Then the panel of judges will evaluate the bouquets based on originality, creativity, presentation, and theme. One grand prize winner will score $5,000 for a staycation and a year's worth of Tyson chicken nuggets. And an additional 150 winners will win a bag of limited time heart-shaped nuggets.
I love that. You've already lost me because it's too much work. But yes, I think it's going to be incredible for that one winner.
I also think it's too much work, but I feel like I'm up for the... I'm usually never up for any
what
of
else
these.
Are people doing?
What else are we doing? Jake, there was one time me and my best friend Michael may or may not have popped a special gummy and, you know, went out on the town. And on the way back, we stopped at McDonald's and I ordered 3 20-piece nuggets.
And the
cashier looked at me and she goes, 60? You want 60 nuggets?
Our favorite thing we used to, what we would do is we would, honestly, like we are, have you seen the last episode of Drag Race with Utica? There's that little thing, Queen Utica, like, oh, have you ever smoked weed? And she like does this whole face friend thing. But yes, I'm a very, 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 very big pothead. And the thing is that you have to diversify. Your mistake is you got 60 nuggets. What we would do is we'd have someone order nuggets, someone order Thai food, someone order a pizza, and then you share. It's all about variety.
No, what ended up happening is because we were craving Buffalo Ranch dressing. So we got a bunch of Buffalo Ranch. And then for some reason, when I partake of this sort of thing, the edible gummies, that is, black pepper, like fresh ground black pepper, for some reason, tastes very, very, very delicious.
It's everything tastes better. It's floral. It's aromatic. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I don't know what it is. So I mix the Buffalo Ranch and then tons of fresh cracked black pepper. And we were just like, oh, this is so delicious. Oh my God, we couldn't get enough. We couldn't get enough. We couldn't get enough. He ended up staying over. We woke up in the morning, right? And in my little kitchen was the remnants of nuggets. And I looked in this bowl and I was like, oh my God, Michael. And he goes, we are disgusting human beings. It was just a bowl of black sauce because we had put so much black pepper in it.
Love it. Into it. Delicious.
You know what? All I have to say is I think you and I are here for the nuggets, but if I actually participate and win, since I'm single and ready to mingle, I will have Tyson send you the nuggets.
And you keep the $5,000. I just want the nuggets.
Yes, right? Or maybe I'm just one of those 150 winners that just get the nuggets, you know?
Love it.
Or we could split them or something, you know? And last but not least, there is a $20 bill out there that is selling for almost $70,000 because there is a banana sticker on it.
Things like that are like what remind me that like the dark side of capitalism. It's just not, I have no comment on that other than like, it's no different from, I saw another thing that was selling for $1,000 and it was a potato chip that was shaped like a goldfish cracker and it was selling for $1,000 and just anything that doesn't have value. And I get like there's a bigger conversation in terms of art and the value we put on it and price, but no.
But this wasn't even art.
It's a sticker.
Funny
it's a sticker. It's a Chiquita banana sticker.
Well, It's actually a Del Monte.
There you go. There we go.
Sticker. but, you know, some random student, like, had pulled this out of an ATM, and he saw this, the dollar bill actually, or the $20 bill actually had the Del Monte sticker printed on it. Like, it was, so I never knew that in the printing process, it goes through three prints. And somewhere along the line, one of the workers put a Del Monte sticker on it, and now part of the seal and the serial number are printed over the sticker, so it's actually part of the bill.
Well, that, all right, it's a little more mint in the sense of it is unique. Still not worth 70 grand.
No, so it originally sold for around $10,000, and then it resold for just over $25,000, and now it's upwards of $67,000 or $81,000, including the 20% buyer's premium, just so you could have this $20 bill with this, like, you know, Del Monte sticker, you know, printed in it. And this is, it's just so weird. From Heritage Auctions, this guy says, most of these errors in this class aren't worth as much, but this one just has captured everyone's fascination. It even made, like, the cover of Coin Week. Look at that.
No. It's no. Enough for me. What? It's, like, very sharp. Like, I'm out. And for that reason, I'm out.
And for that reason, I think this is a great way to end Food News Update. How was that for you? Was that,
loved
was,
it. Was that just loved like... it.
I loved everything about that. You may be one of my favorite Food News co-anchors yet, you know? We may need to flesh that out. Have your people call my people. I want to get back to just kind of you and your man and whatnot. And I'm really curious about what coming out was like for you.
Easy. It's really like one of those things where I think it is so, such an important conversation to be talking about that process on the full spectrum of experiences. For myself, I came out to an incredibly supportive family and had nothing but love outpouring from each and every one of them. My husband had a similar experience. For others, that's not the case. And I think the most important thing is that in media, we're seeing representation of both, because for so long, I think Call Me By Your Name and Love, Simon got a lot of criticism, and rightfully so in some aspects. But for others, like my always response to that was like, this was the first time that I saw my family represented and my personal experience kind of play out in terms of my internal coming to terms with sexuality, versus I think it's equally important to see the like Prayers for Bobby experiences as well. And I just think there's, like we talked about in terms of food, it's like everyone is going to go through this world differently based on their own family journey. And it's just important for people to have that kind of exposure no matter what.
Yeah, and this is what I talk about a lot on this podcast. Our stories matter, and I have gotten a full gamut of everyone's stories, from, you know, growing up in foster care to being kicked out of the house to really amazing stories like you that just, you know, it was easy, but you never know who it's going to resonate
exactly
with. And how it's going to resonate in that way. So what a blessing it is to have such a family. I was also very lucky that my mom is the best and, you know, loves her gay bar. You know, you can't pull her out of the bar. And I mean, I have my own issues with Call Me By Your Name, not necessarily the movie itself, but the people in it. You know, even though he's gotten a lot of traction lately, right? You know,
I mean, those DMs were just like, oof.
Yeah, they were. I mean, it's on the subject of food, right? Cannibalism. We haven't talked about it on the pod. It's on the subject. We've had a lot of firsts on this pod with you, Jake. Oh my God. Oh my God. Talk to me about this book. When's it's coming out in the spring.
Yeah, March 9th.
What are we to expect? What's your favorite thing about it? Tell me everything.
I just think it's super personal. It's super campy. It's fun. It's very much an extension of myself. It has recipes from my family. It has recipes from my husband's family. And there's recipes that I've developed as part of our relationship and then kind of mashed the two together. The key part is like the whole book was developed through Shabbat. So like I would test these recipes as I was like cooking for others on Friday night. So it's all meant for like cooking for others and extending hospitality. And it is a lot of work went into it. I think you see a lot of times cookbooks, these like short little head notes of like, this is yummy. I like to put this and this together. Each recipe has a story, has a little short essay about its either historical significance, family significance, personal significance, all of it. And it's really like, yeah, I always like to say it's like, it's our love story.
Oh, I love that. Oh my God. I absolutely love that. What's your favorite moment out of the book?
Probably the author photo. The author photo is so ridiculous. And the fact that they, like, I had to fight for it because you just have to go see. I shared a photo on my Instagram of it, but it was, I wanted to recreate like a very campy, thing. It's me holding a remember there was that kid who did his yearbook photo with his cat with the laser beams, and I recreated that with the challah.
Oh, this.
Yeah.
This one.
And that's blown up in the book.
Oh my God, how very like late 80s.
That's it.
Like,
it was school I wanted photo. I wanted it to just be 100% authentic to me, and I wasn't going to compromise. I didn't want this to be commercial. I wanted it to be very much exactly how I envision it. And
I love that.
I was very blessed to have advice from someone I really look up to in this industry. And the story pretty much came down to, it's like, your publisher won't work with you again if the book is a flop. So it might as well be exactly how you envision it, that you think it would be a success, because it doesn't matter. It doesn't, if it's a success or if it's not a success, that's out of your hands. The most important thing is that it is as much in line with what you want it to be.
I love that. I love that. And once, do we have an actual release
March
date
9th.
Or is it just?
March 9th.
March 9th. March 9th. And tell the kids where they can pre-order, please.
Anywhere fine books are sold. Literally everywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, Walmart, but also Bookshop, IndieBound, a lot of local... You check your local indie store, Indie Bookshop on their website. They probably have it already ready for pre-order.
I love... Yes. In the words of Dan Pelosi, I live, laugh, lasagna.
I have the shirt. It's in my drawer. I have the shirt. You don't even. Of course.
Oh my goodness. This has been so much fun with you. I don't want it to end, Jake. I don't want it to end. But we do have to say goodbye. Thank you so much for just giving me all of your time and being such a joy and such like a joyous spirit today. This has been absolutely wonderful. And I truly believe that this was right time, right place. And this was the exact moment that like we needed to come together in this sphere. So I am very grateful for you today. So thank you.
My pleasure. It was so much fun.
In Your Mouth, listeners, if you want to follow Jake Cohen, you can go to his Instagram @ Jake Cohen. Right, Jake?
Yep. Everywhere.
Right? @ Jake Cohen everywhere. Also, you can go to wakeandjake.com. That's his website that obviously needs to be updated. It's so pretty, though. I would have never known if you told me. It's really beautiful. I may steal an idea or two of yours once I get off my tuchus and get moving with mine again. But thanks again. Go follow Jake. Go show him all the love. You can always show me love @ In Your Mouth Pod or @ The Kitchen Gaily on Instagram. You can buy merch at www.themunoz.com/mouthmerch. And with that, you know, I'm just going to keep celebrating 3 years of In Your Mouth, giving it to you and giving it to you hard weekly. And as always, thank you for listening to In Your Mouth.